Before we begin, have you ever thought about starting your own judo club? Because, you know, you've done hundreds of breakfalls and thousands of uchikomi, and maybe it's time to pass on all that experience. Well, if you are based in New South Wales and starting a judo club is something which has been on your mind, then listen closely. Judo New South Wales are offering free workshops for all you soon-to-be coaches so that you can get started straight away. This is your opportunity to connect with financing, mentoring, and marketing guidance resources. So, if you've been feeling the itch to inspire a new generation of judoka, click on the link in the description below, and you could be running your own dojo by this time next year. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to the Judo Edit podcast. It's Mel Budiato here, and I'm glad you've tuned into this episode because we have a special Aussies in Quarantine edition. Today, we have two guests from the Australian judo team who have just returned to Australia after fighting at the Judo Masters event in Doha. Fan favourite Tinker Easton is back, and making her debut on the podcast is our Australian 70kg representative, Aoife Coughlan. Hi there, Tinker and Aoife. So great to see you both. How are you doing?
Good, Mel. How are you?
Thanks for having us.
I'm good. And look, I'm just glad to be talking to you guys, hearing about, you know, the fact that judo is back up and running again. So what day of quarantine are you guys up to now?
So we're on day 5, but we started on day 0.
And I guess a lot of our listeners are international. So just to give a bit of background, everybody basically coming in to Australia has to quarantine for 14 days, regardless of whether they have COVID or not. But I'm assuming that you guys have tested all negative so far?
Yeah, negative tests.
6 times or something.
Oh my goodness. Wow, that's a lot of times to get stabbed up the nose. And so what have you been doing to keep yourself entertained so far?
Yeah, well, we've got some judo mats and some training equipment, so training twice a day, and then we're just like watching movies, listening to podcasts, and I'm doing some uni. So.
A little bit of reading, yeah. And then just sitting in every different corner of the hotel room just to feel like we're moving around, you know?
Yeah. So it's like, oh, I'll meet you over in, you know, living room corner 4 for lunch or something.
Yeah, it's pretty much, oh, I sat on this couch for an hour already. Maybe I'll go lie down in this corner for an hour. Who knows? Keep it exciting.
Do you know which corner has the best Wi-Fi now?
It's pretty good all over,
it's all right. So that's not a problem, thankfully. Okay.
We've been hearing so much in the Australian media about, you know, the tennis athletes complaining about their food. So I got to ask, what's the food situation like over there?
We're pretty lucky, actually. The hotel we're staying at, we got to have a conversation with the hotel chef, and he was very understanding, and he's been very, very helpful with providing us with the food that we need. Mm. So I don't have any complaints.
No, it's been all good. Pretty much just like diet-friendly food and then fruit and yogurt and stuff. So.
Yeah.
You're also able to order out if you need to, or get Coles or Woolies deliveries as well. So it's not that bad.
Okay, that's good. From what I've been hearing from like the tennis athletes, it sounded like it was like a very dire situation, but I'm glad it's not the case for you.
I mean,
apparently in Sydney it's really bad. So I think it just depends what state you're in.
Yeah, we've been lucky, so pretty grateful for that.
And obviously you're quarantining because you've just flown back from Doha. So walk us through the last couple of weeks. When did you guys receive, you know, invitation to Doha? What sort of happened there?
Yep. So for me, I qualified in the top 36. So I've known for a while that I was going to the Masters, and it was just a matter of whether or not the competition was actually going to go ahead. So I've known for a little while now, which was helpful with my preparation. Yeah.
And then I think early December, we got extra wildcard spots because we didn't get to do continentals this year. Mm. So I kind of found out then.
How did it feel walking to the first competition after, you know, coronavirus lockdowns?
It was exciting. I think for the past 11 months, I've just been waiting to fight. So just knowing that finally get to go was, exciting but nerve-wracking.
For sure.
Yeah, I think we were all just so happy to be back on the mat and competing. It's what you work your whole life towards doing. So to actually be able to do it again is great.
Yeah. Flying during this time, was it strange?
It was weird because the flight was empty.
Uh-huh.
Which is ideal when it's busy, you know, if you get to lie down and have a sleep, especially on those long flights. But yeah, it was definitely strange. I think I remarked when we were leaving that I thought there were more crew than there were passengers on the way over, which was weird to see.
So it must have felt like, you know, personal service, personal flight.
Oh, that's awesome. I did have one of the flight attendants was particularly attentive on the way back. I must have looked very tired because she kept checking in.
Oh, that's so kind of her. And were there any additional like COVID safety measures you had to undertake while you were in Doha?
Yeah, so before we left, so the IJF protocol is that you have two negative test results come back within 5 days of your arrival and no less than 48 hours apart. So we had to do the two tests before we left. And then when we arrived at the airport, we had to do another test. And then we got driven directly to our hotel, given our rooms, they put a red wristband on us and we weren't allowed to leave our rooms until we got the results back from that airport test. Then you get given a green band. You have to wear your mask whenever you're outside of your room and you're not eating or drinking, maintain social distancing. Then we had another test the day before weigh-in, so 48 hours before our competition. Again, masks everywhere at the competition as well, social distancing. They clean the mats every hour or so, every 45 minutes. Or something like that as well. They disinfected all of that. So.
And sanitize the scales between each person.
Yeah, hand sanitizer was everywhere. So precautions were taken by the organizers and everybody was great with following them. And I never felt like there was any risk at all.
Yeah, that's so good. Preparing for the competition itself, you sort of, I guess, knowing that it's this master's level competition, know that it's going to be a very high level field. What was your training like leading up to it?
Pretty normal, really. We did judo 5 times a week. So we'd do randori sessions and then technique sessions. Tried to get in as many partners as we could. We had a really good group who constantly came in to help us out. Like, because a lot of them could have been on holidays, but they came in to help us. And then we also did like strength and conditioning in the mornings.
Yeah.
We pretty much trained exactly how we would train for any competition. So our routine was the same. The intensity level was maybe a little bit higher during randori and stuff like that, but it was pretty normal.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And look, it showed because both of you fought really strongly during the event. Tinker, from what I saw of your fight, you were fighting really well and got a little bit unlucky there towards the end of your first round. How did that fight play out for you?
Yeah, I think I did well compared to the other times I'd fought her. I felt like I was more in control, but I kind of deviated from the gripping pattern a bit and got thrown because of it. So, but yeah, it was good to be back fighting and I felt strong.
So I guess for you, what are your takeaways from that fight or just from the competition?
That just because we've been away for 11 months doesn't mean that like we're behind from where we were before. And to follow the plan.
Always a good idea.
And look, Aoife, congratulations on coming fifth.
Thank you.
You know, you fought some big names, and I think the most notable that the listeners would recognize is Kim Polling, who is a 4 times Masters champion. So can you break down how the day went for you?
Yeah, so my first round fight was against Portela from Brazil, world number 12, and we're very similar in our stature and in our fighting styles. So the plan was to control the grips and to make sure that it was a high intensity, high paced fight and just to stick to the processes. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty happy with how that went because I got down to 2 shidos and stuck to the process, didn't lose my cool and managed to bring it back, which was really good. My second fight was then against Polyez, the Austrian, who's world number 5, I think. And that, so she's left-handed, so that game plan changed from there. So more control of the sleeve, making sure my elbow's inside and using my feet to unbalance her because she likes to be stable and in control. I think, again, I stuck to the plan pretty well, followed the process again, if you don't mind me repeating the same thing again and again, and just worked until I managed to find the opening to get the throw that won me the fight in Golden Score. Then Polling, that one was fun. It was a completely different plan. So she likes to pick up and counter and throw big. So the idea was don't do any big standing turn-ins. So make sure everything's low, chop at the feet, and just keep working so that she doesn't have a chance to settle and to take me back at any point. And you can see it when you rewatch the fight. She gets rather frustrated throughout the fight, which you don't notice when you're doing it, but it is good to see that the plan's working. Then that got me through to the semi-final, against Tamazova, a Russian I fought the start of 2019 in Paris. And I made a mistake then, and I made another mistake now. She's quite good, and she is good at capitalizing on little mistakes that you make. And throughout the fight, I got caught rather early, I think. It could have been midway through, and just didn't manage to bring it back, which is all right because, you know, mistakes make you learn. So we'll figure that out and not do it next time. And then the bronze medal fight, again, was doing really well, just controlling the pace, controlling the grips, managed to get up two penalties into and then through to golden score. And then I made a very, very silly mistake and let her get a grip under my armpit around my hip and got thrown, unfortunately. You rewatch it and it makes you tick a little bit because you go, oh no, it's the slightest of scores, but it is a score. So
yeah, one of those borderline ones, right?
Yeah, and it's you're fighting really well, you're doing everything you're supposed to do, and then small laps, and that's
gone. And judo is brutal like that. You make a small mistake and that can be it.
Yeah, exactly.
But at the same time, it's also what raises the stakes and makes it fun, I guess.
Yeah. And you never know, like when you're fighting, anybody can beat anybody on a given day. So it's always going to be exciting. Like you can have your picks and everything, but anybody can win on any day if it's their day.
Mm-hmm. And here you both talk about strategy and things like that. How far in advance have you planned, you know, what you're going to be, I guess, what approach you'll be taking against left-handers or right-handers? Is that a set strategy regardless of the competition or regardless of who you fight? Or I guess what I mean is how much of it is pre-planned and how much of it is like you sort of adjust on the day?
At training, we'll work on gripping patterns for either specific opponents that we've fought in the past or like certain stances or gripping styles. We'll work on that. And then when the draw comes out, you know, we'll talk strategy for that particular person. But obviously then when you're on the mat, anything can change and you've got to be adaptable.
And so at what point, well, I guess not at what point, but is there any point at which you're, you know, halfway through a fight and you realize your strategy is not working and you should switch it? Or is it always that you should probably stick to the same one that you've figured out with your coach?
I guess that depends on whether you're executing it well enough or if it's just not working. So if something's not working, it's probably better to change it. So in the little breaks where you get to hear your coach, they'll often have picked up, if you haven't already picked up, that it's not working and something needs to change. So you need to have backup plans, and you also need to be listening out for your coach telling you if something little needs to change. And it's not usually going to be a very big thing. It's going to be something small, that an adjustment on where you have your sleeve grip or chop the feet out more, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, the Australian coach, Daniel Kelly, I can see in the background there with his mask on yelling stuff. As in like on the video, not
behind
you. How much of that do you hear during the fight? Because I guess things are going so quickly. Like how much of it can you pick up from him?
Depends on how hard he's yelling at me, whether I've been doing good or doing bad, depends on the level he's been yelling. But he usually keeps his tips nice and short, and he'll only yell out what he'll yell out during competition so that it triggers the movement that needs to be done or the adjustment that needs to be made. So that, because you don't really have a lot of time to say anything, it's going to be a 5-second break and it can't be a massive spew out of word vomit. So he needs to be very quick and succinct with what he's saying, and he's very good at that.
Yeah. And Tinka, I saw that you went down to Melbourne in between lockdowns and things like that to train. Was that the reason? Was it to get better communication with Daniel?
Originally, we started before New South Wales could do judo. So everyone got invited down to Melbourne for a restart camp in June. And then, because there was a good training group, Daniel's there, everything just really worked out. So I thought I'd stay down longer. Got caught up in lockdown number two along the way. But yeah, it's all training partners, having coaches there, and also just like having a good group of people to push me along.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, when those lockdowns happened, did you guys sit down with Daniel or the other coaches and sort of discuss how to approach it as well?
Yeah, so after the first lockdown in Victoria, which was Australia-wide, I think, we were open for about 2 weeks, and then we got told that Victoria was going into another hard lockdown. So there was 2 days where we didn't have any idea what was going to happen. Did we have to move everything back into the garage? Would we be able to get a worker's permit under a certain categorization? Stuff like that. So for about 2 days, Daniel and Maria were communicating with the AOC and the combat center at the AIS and just trying to figure out for us what was going on. And so it worked out that we ended up getting elite athlete, professional athlete workers permits. So we were able to keep training under some stricter guidelines and stuff like that, but it was better than being back in the garage. So
yeah, for sure. And I guess over the past couple of years now, you guys have both been fighting overseas and have had quite a few successes, you know, medals at the Asian Opens and various competitions in Europe. So you know, have you, because you've been, I guess, appearing on various news broadcasts, have people been noticing you on the street or has anyone recognized you?
No, I can't say that. I definitely get people who I don't recognize in the judo community saying hello and things like that, but I can't say that I'm a
celebrity,
a D-grade or grade celebrity yet. No,
not quite there yet. Okay, look, I'll try and push this podcast as hard as I can into the you know, media, and hopefully you'll have people asking you for autographs. And have you guys noticed that overseas, that I guess Australian judoka have been receiving more attention or more coverage at all?
I think people aren't like underestimating us as much anymore. In the past, they'd be like, oh, I got an Australian first. Great. Who's second? But now I think they're more like, oh, I don't know how that's going to go. Like, it's kind of changed their perspective of us and our ability.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I think it's definitely earned a little bit more respect from the international community, and that goes from competitors, coaches, spectators, all of that. So yeah.
Well, look, all credit to you guys for, I guess, playing a role in that. And so, you know, you've mentioned before that you're doing within your quarantine hotel some workouts. Could you give us an example of what a workout has been like in the last few days?
Sure. You want to tell them what we did this morning?
Okay. This morning we did some deadlifts, sort of getting up to my maximum, not hers. And then we did a little Tabata workout.
Tabata workout.
So we've got a bike and then the weights. So one person was doing push press, hang clean, or front squats, while the other person was doing the bike. And so it's 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off, 8 times per set.
And we did some Russian twists to finish off. And then yesterday, before we'd gotten the equipment, we did just bodyweight stuff, burpees, push-ups and squats. And I've probably done more burpees in the last 3 days than I have in a little while, for sure.
I feel like on average, judoka are pretty good at burpees because we get used to just having to stand up all the time. Every throw.
I hate them.
Oh, really?
They're great for your cardio and everything, but
they're disgusting.
I hate them. Burpees are gross, and you feel like you've done 1,000 when you've really only done 10.
So I sort of like burpees in comparison to other exercises because I feel like I have good proportion for burpees. Like, I've got like short legs, so I don't even have to jump very high or anything.
Oh, me too, but I still hate them.
I guess you must be doing a lot more burpees than me. I think that's safe to say.
We decided to do death by burpees the other day, and that definitely wasn't fun.
Oh, really?
It felt like a beep test. So the first 15 rounds or so until you got to the 15 reps was fine, and then it's like hitting that 9.5 or that 10 on a beep test.
My goodness. And how many burpees did you do in total, do you know?
I haven't done the maths.
I completed a full round of 20, and then I did about 20 and a half. I didn't quite make 21, which was very disappointing.
You better do it again then. You didn't get there. It doesn't count.
We'll do it again next week because Tinker wants some redemption. She wants to beat me.
Yeah. Burpees are my thing. Then I got beat.
And TK, could you feel it the next day?
Yeah.
Okay. And so apart from burpees, what have you learned about yourselves during the whole lockdown experience?
Just like how much I want to do it. Like, it's easy to be like, I want to do judo when you can do judo all the time, but then to push yourself to train at home when there's no one else around. Like the first 3 months of quarantine, I trained by myself every day, twice a day. So like just knowing that I can push myself to do that without having like a coach there or training partners.
How did you get yourself through those two sessions a day by yourself?
You know, I've always got competitions and Olympics on my mind. So I was like, just knowing that whatever I do now will help later on.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And Aoife, what did you learn about yourself during the whole COVID and lockdown experience?
I learned how to cope a little bit more with change and the not knowing whether or not we were going to be being able to train or being able to compete. And my adaptability, I think, is increased, which is good for me because I can be very stuck in my ways sometimes. And just if you put your head down, you do the work, it's going to pay off in the long run. So that's all that's important is putting in and doing the work, like Tinka said.
Yeah, 100%. And what have you learned about each other during quarantine? You know, being stuck in that same apartment for, well, 5 days now and counting.
Tinka sleeps very heavily. So she likes to go to bed early, and that's fine because she sleeps very heavily.
Yeah, 9 hours a night.
Oh, that's so good.
We've been away a lot together, and I think we get along pretty well, and we have no issues here, so that's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like her. She's good. She'll do.
Tinka, have you learned anything about Aoife?
I don't know.
Say something nice.
She is bigger than you, so...
I don't really know if I've learned anything new.
No.
Just knew everything new. Already.
I'm an open book. I don't hide it.
Fair enough. Once you're out of quarantine, 10 days or so, and you sort of fly back to your respective state, or are you going back home?
Going back to Melbourne.
Back to Melbourne.
For a week and a half.
Two weeks, something like that.
And then Israel for the Grand Slam.
What other competitions are coming up for you guys?
Quite a few, yeah. It looks like. The IJF came out with their schedule, and there's definitely lots, still another six or so before qualification period ends.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of planning to be done between all of us athletes to see what we do and logistically what's going to be the best for us. Coming back and forth a lot isn't really manageable with the 2 weeks of quarantine. So we'll have to see what happens and go from there.
Yeah, so we'll end up going overseas and not coming back for a while.
That's a real possibility.
There's competitions 2 weeks apart, so if we go home, we miss the competition in quarantine.
Adaptability,
like I said before.
Exactly. Are most of these based competitions in Europe?
Georgia's in Europe. Yeah. So there's Israel, Georgia,
Turkey,
and
Worlds are in Budapest.
And then we've also got an Asian Pacific Champs in Kyrgyzstan, which will be a fun new place to go to.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Is there another one or two Grand Slams?
Paris. In Paris. So,
Mostly
Europe-based.
And so if, you know, listeners want to follow you online, want to see you in all these various countries, where is the best place for them to do so?
Yeah, so my Instagram, which is Tinka_Rose, is probably the best. I post the most on there.
Same for me on Instagram. Mine's Eef_Coughlan. So Eef_COUGHLAM.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Tinka and Aoife. So wonderful to catch up and chat with you guys and hear about, you know, what's been happening in Doha. And oh, you do have a visitor there. It's Daniel Kelly.
Yeah, there's Daniel. There he is. He's woken from his nap and he's come to say hi.
Hi there, Daniel. You're now on the Judo Edit podcast.
Oh, sorry.
Feel free. I plan to get him on the podcast for a full interview at some stage. So surprise debut there. But look, I'll let you guys go. You obviously have to catch up with your coach. So look, thank you so much. I hope the rest of quarantine goes smoothly.
No worries.
Thanks for having us, Mel.
Friends, we've reached the end of another episode of the Judo Edit podcast. I hope you enjoyed that interview. And don't forget, the Judo Edit podcast is looking for sponsors for the rest of the season. So reach out to me if you think that your brand would benefit. Send me an email, mel@thejudoedit.com, or on Instagram @thejudoedit. As usual, like, follow, share with your friends. And this is Melissa Budiato signing off.